Hello, my name is Indy Buller, and I'm Curator for Economics and Social Policy at LSE Library. This podcast will give you an audible overview of the latest in the Library's ongoing series of public exhibitions. And this time it's the turn of the summer exhibition, which is called A Wealth of Ideas. You can find out more information about opening times, how to find us, and previous exhibitions on the exhibition page of LSE Library's website at www.lse.ac.uk/library/exhibitions. A Wealth of Ideas was originally planned as an exhibition marking the 200th anniversary of the publication of David Ricardo's classic economic text on the principles of political economy and taxation. From this, we expanded the coverage to include many of the other texts and ideas which have shaped and influenced the wealth of ideas which make up economic thought in Britain. LSE's reputation as a global leader in economic teaching and research, and as home to many renowned thinkers, is also recognised in the second part of the exhibition's story. Remember, all of the items mentioned today are held in our collections and can be viewed in the library's reading room. Further information about how you can come and see these materials can be found on our library's visitor webpages. Now, on with the story. Starting in a large wall case to the right of the entrance, the exhibition begins with defining terms. What do we mean when we talk about economics? Many have sought to define the scope of the subject, leading to a number of competing accounts. LSE Library holds a significant collection of materials which help trace the history of economics in Britain. Among them are many rarely seen items such as William Playfair's Commercial and Political Atlas from 1786, which has beautifully hand-coloured statistical graphs, widely considered to be the earliest ever published. The book is open to a page with a line graph showing the differences in trade between Africa and the United Kingdom. The following section of the exhibition looks at three key ideas: wealth, welfare, and wants, and how they have been used by various writers to shape discussions about economics. The first of these is wealth. The production, accumulation, and distribution of wealth fascinated early economic thinkers, and such topics still make headline news today. Some of the earliest authors of economics, such as Sir William Petty and Adam Smith, wanted to understand the ways in which wealth was produced, secured, and maintained. Petty's writings demonstrated the wealth and power of the British state by recording all the elements that made up the political arithmetic of the day. A century later, Smith would shift the focus of analysis away from the state to the rights of individuals to produce and freely trade wealth. David Ricardo was interested in how and where wealth was distributed, and how the value of commodities depended on how much work went into producing them. The books written by Harriet Martineau and Jane Marcet are early British economic writings by women. These texts were intended to explain economic ideas and principles to wider audiences by using stories and dialogue. Jane Marcet's book, from 1816, Conversations on Political Economy, features in the exhibition, and it's open to the page where the two characters are discussing what wealth is. Consider what would be the situation of a country which possessed no other wealth than money. Do you recollect what estimation Robinson Crusoe held his bag of gold when he was wrecked upon a desert island? Political posters were also intended to increase and influence public awareness of economic matters. To illustrate this, we have two large colour posters on display, one of which is a pro-free market poster and shows a shop overflowing with cheap goods, and another shows the damaging impact of global trade and shows a British factory closed apparently due to unfair foreign competition. The next section in this story is called Welfare. The question of where people and their welfare fit within economics has also been widely discussed. Alfred Marshall's Principle of Economics was enormously influential for many years after its publication, and it created the tools of analysis to understand various economic principles. However, his definition of the discipline placed people and their material well-being at its centre. For many others, economics was not just a detached theoretical science, but one which had an ethical role. Some writers recognised that wealth, as well as being gathered and produced, also needed to be effectively distributed if it was going to satisfy human needs. Chief in this school of thought was Karl Marx, who spent nearly half his life living in England and used the economic and social development of the country as the basis of his most famous work, Das Kapital. We have book two of Capital open in the exhibition, and find Marx in combative form, as he writes, "Accumulation of wealth at one pole is, therefore, at the same time, accumulation of misery, agony of toil, slavery, ignorance, brutality, mental degradation at the opposite pole." The final part of this section looks at wants. Understanding the nature of human desires has also helped our understanding of economics. Yet balancing our desires, needs, and wants with an ultimately finite world has proved an ongoing problem. Most famously, Thomas Malthus hypothesized that an unchecked increase in the human population would lead to widespread famine. Such a scenario, according to Malthus, would have arisen as a result of the lack of space and resources to cater for both a growing population and food production. Now we move to the tabletop case and some of the personalities who have shaped economics at the school. The school was founded in 1895, but only granted degree-awarding powers in 1900, when it became part of the University of London as the Faculty of Economics and Political Science. Edwin Cannon joined the school in 1895 and remained for over 30 years. In that time, he had a significant influence over the teaching of economics. In 1920, a copy of his book, Wealth, was placed in a time capsule under the foundation stone of the old building, quite literally becoming part of the fabric of the school. A few years after the departure of Cannon, Lionel Robbins was appointed chair of the economics department. Robbins spent 30 years at the helm of the department, and his influence was enormous, especially through his changing the definition of economics to focus analysis on the efficient use of scarce resources. He appointed Friedrich Hayek in 1931, and together they challenged John Maynard Keynes's approach to economics, which dominated thinking after the Second World War. A letter which features in the case, sent from Hayek to Robbins, encapsulates this antipathy. "I shall stay here until Tuesday early morning, because I have been asked to attend the meeting of the Keynes Club on Monday evening. I want to do so very much, because I would like to have an opportunity to fight Keynes on the subject of his recent broadcast, which, to say it frankly, horrified me. It has also put me in a somewhat delicate position here, because I had prepared my lecture for the Marshall Society so as to denounce, as an extremely dangerous popular delusion, the very same doctrines which Keynes has now put forward." Very few, if any, women were appointed into the economic faculty in its early years. Lillian Knowles and Vera Anstey really were trailblazing figures, teaching economic history and commerce respectively. Knowles would later go on to become the first female dean in the University of London. An array of talented and pioneering economic minds have been part of the LSE's story. Ronald Coase published his article, The Nature of the Firm, in 1937. It investigated why business organizations existed, but it took over 40 years for his insights to be recognized with the Nobel Prize. Others who taught or studied here and produced pioneering work include Amartya Sen and Arthur Lewis, both of whom contributed hugely to the analysis of developing economies. Mark Blaug, who took keen interest in how the economics of the arts shaped our cultural landscape. James Mead has been described as the founding father of the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, or GATT. This agreement would later lead to the foundation of the World Trade Organization. Mead, while teaching at LSE, also influenced and supported both William Phillips and Sir Anthony Atkinson. Phillips, together with Walter Newlin, created a machine which ingeniously used water to demonstrate how money flowed around the British economy. The machine was rapturously received at its debut at the school in 1949, and a working model can now be found in the Science Museum. The case features a black and white photograph of Bill stood in front of the machine, looking at it with cigarette in one hand. Tony Atkinson's contributions have defined our understanding of economic inequality. His work is still being used, as Thomas Piketty claimed, to demonstrate that economics is first and foremost a social and moral science.